The Indians. A month later, asleep in the Super 8, I dreamt I was trying to open a big wooden door, but constantly slipped on the highly polished floor. Why was I wearing socks? I woke confused and worried that I was late. I had a meeting with the Indians. The Indians were so determined to take our business. I checked the clock. Plenty of time. But when I got to the parking lot, I remembered the important thing from the day before. The deflated tire on my rental car. I had driven from the office without noticing. I'd seen my father fix a flat, so I understood the basic concept. However, my method of repair usually involves something going terribly wrong. I've had shelves fall on my head. Ah, the molly bolt goes in that way. Caught my big toe with a pitchfork, and cooled a soldering iron with my hand, several times. I had, by my estimation, an 80% chance of having the car fall on me, roll into a ditch, and explode. I called Hertz. The helpful service person offered to call me back. 30 minutes later, she apologized for the delay and explained that her conversation with the authorized service company in Clarinda had gone something like this. This is Hertz calling. I have a car with a flat tire. Where is it? At the Super 8 Motel. That's just across town. So I can put you down for service in the next hour? This is a body shop. We don't fix flats. You're the listed service agent, sir. Is it a woman? No, sir. It's a man. He can't fix it? Sir, it's Hertz policy to help customers. If you won't do it, I'll have to warn you that your service contract may be revoked. We don't do that sort of thing. The guy on the phone ran the body shop I could see from my office window, and also happened to be Clarinda's mayor, a man who'd been involved in approving the development loans we'd gotten to hire people in his community, although he couldn't have known it was me since he had refused to help. The Hertz person had to call two more places before she found someone willing to fix a flat for a man. In the hour from when the man arrived, inflated the tire, and had me drive it slowly to the shop around the block, patched the small hole, put it back on the car, and presented me the bill, he would neither speak nor look at me. I don't like being disliked, even if it's for such an insubstantial reason as not being able to put on a spare tire. I gave him a $20 tip. He examined the bill as if I had handed him a lace doily. I worried there was even more of a pathetic city boy thing to do. I had been told too much of a tip is considered to be humiliating in Iowa, an insult. So I was relieved when he smiled and said, "If you ever need help again, call me," and gave me his card. Finally arriving at work, I began to perspire. The spring day had been unreasonably warm, and the conference room, which had never been connected to the main building's air conditioning, was too hot. The pendulum clock on the wall had long since stopped ticking. I asked Frank, and he had told me a little sheepishly that we were the first bosses not to insist on keeping it wound, and he'd always hated it anyway. He showed me where he'd hidden the key inside the mechanism. The three men from Bangalore arrived, and with their hair uniformly slicked from left to right and all wearing double-breasted pinstripe suits, which they did not unbutton to sit down. Rather than spreading out, they arranged themselves directly next to me. Pradep, the manager, smiled and cocked his head. The other two scanned the room and inspected the mechanical action of their chairs. They didn't seem bothered by the heat at all. "Did you have a good trip?" I asked, while waiting for Dan. "Oh, not bad, not bad at all," Pradep said. "What is it, 19 hours? 24 hours. We had a very long transfer in London. But there will only be 20 hours going back," he said, his head still cocked. "You're going back, right? You really just came to see us, all three of you." "Only to see this Clarinda." "No other customers." "Only if we have to," the other two nodded. One of them pulled out a computer and began typing. "So you have appointments with publishers in New York?" Pradep smiled more broadly and pulled out a business card from his vest pocket. "I'm sorry, this is your company." The other two also took out their cards, and they queued in place to put them carefully in my hand. I apologized for not having my cards and went to my office to get some. I knew the men from India were frustrated. They saw the opportunity in typesetting, but had mixed luck selling directly to publishers in America. The low prices sometimes won for them, but at the same time, buyers were leery of losing their jobs if schedules were missed, and usually preferred known suppliers like Clarinda. So until they could get past this roadblock, the Indians had reasoned, maybe they could sell to us. We had our operation in Manila, but the $6,000 a year we paid our Filipino staff was more than triple the average salary in India. Without the extremely low-cost production from India, there was no way we would be able to compete once the publishers got over their fears. I returned, chose a chair across the table, and asked if they had brought samples. The silent one, without the computer, produced a copy of the Journal of the Royal Society of Veterinary Medicine. In much the same way, we had ended up in Manila because of the American occupation of the Philippines. The Indians got their business from the UK publishers because of the British Raj. "Have you been typesetting for long?" I asked while leafing through the journal. I knew they had only been at their current company for a few months. "I redacted for Reed Elsevier for many years," Pradep said. "Redacted? You mean you copy-edited science journals?" I put the journal upside down on the table, open to a page that I thought Dan would find interesting. The two silent men frowned at the bent binding and together reached out to write it. The first returned to his computer, and the second smoothed the cover before returning it to his case, as if it was a hurt puppy. Pradep beamed joyfully. "Science journals. We are all professional engineers from Chennai University." "That's very impressive," I said. "Is that why you all left Dataset together?" Pradep's smile shrunk to a point. The silent man stopped typing. They had gone into business by the common Indian entrepreneur's practice of leaving their employer, forming their own company, then targeting the former employer's customers. I received an email every week from a new Indian company that had stolen a mailing list. Even the introductory email they had was plagiarized. I knew because how likely was it that five different companies would all offer 99.99.5% accuracy? I guess the extra decimal point meant they'd already delivered their 0.0005 errors. Dan appeared at the door wearing his blue blazer. In moments, everyone was standing, smiling, shaking hands, handing out cards. "Thank you," Dan said, and slid the card into his pocket without examining them, causing Pradep and his men to knit their eyebrows in horror. "So you fellows like the weather here?" Pradep appeared to be still waiting for Dan's card. He clapped his hands lightly together several times. "Ah, it's not as bad as we had worried." "It's always the way," Dan said. "I bet you fine gentlemen were prepared anyway." Pradep returned to smiling, which led his smile at partners to return to their computers and furniture adjustments. "So you fellows interested in doing a book with us? We would be very honored and pleased to be considered..." Dan tossed a manuscript on the table. "This customer needs us to use tech. I understand you fellows are pretty good at tech." Pradep grabbed the manuscript and began flipping through it. "And who is the customer?" "I don't think," I said. "Oxford," Dan interjected. "Are you doing work for them in England? They haven't heard of you in the New York office." "Oxford. We have done some things for them," Pradep said. "Well, maybe we should find something else then." Pradep was confused. He was so proud that he didn't perceive we were worried about him stealing our customers. Or maybe he just didn't care. "Unless you promise to do only work for the American publishers through us," Dan said. Pradep understood that. "I think we could make an arrangement for this book." Dan sighed and nodded a few times. "All right, we'll discuss that later. What price would you give me for this book?" Pradep handed the manuscript to his men. They discussed in Hindi. There was much finger-pointing at the manuscript and flipping of pages. I knew how much Dan hated people using foreign languages to hide their conversations in front of us. It went against everything he believed in about being straightforward. "Maybe you need some more time to think this over. I was hoping to give you the manuscript to take with you." "I am sorry," Pradep said. "This is a very generous offer." "We suggest $12 per page." "But," Dan said, and slid their cards out of his pocket to glance at them, "Pradep, that's what we would charge the customers ourselves." He pronounced it Pradeep. "$5, Pradeep suggested. Labor was so cheap in India that he had to guess at the price because his cost, by my calculation, was only pennies. I tried to bring the conversation around to the future beyond one book. Dan listened while I pointed out that the prices were falling, and there would come a time when there would be no room for both Clarinda and an Indian company to make a profit on the same job. I told them I knew their labor costs and their work process. I went to the whiteboard and showed them that one Clarinda employee, who wasn't that efficient in the first place, did the work of 10 or 20 of their employees. They accepted inefficiency and manual work, I explained, because labor was cheaper than technology. I didn't write on the whiteboard that when it came to people, India beat us hands down. Indian companies ran three shifts a day. Our third shift was one grandmother. Dan's proposals to run 24/7 got the response of, quote, "People have families. They can't work like that anymore." but racing to take away our business, the Indians didn't have such concerns. Pradeep nodded solemnly as I said, "What's more important to us here is to have a partner we can trust in India. We know you have low costs, but we can teach you the most modern techniques. We'd like to help you. There's so much we can do together." He continued nodding before realizing I had stopped talking. "Yes," he said. "We are very interested in doing your work." I squinted at him, not sure what to say. And Pradeep looked from Dan to me and back again, opened his palms and said, "We would be happy to teach you our management techniques." "Pradeep," Dan said wearily, "how about $4 a page?"